Our final case of the day is United States v. Canty.
May it please the Court. Mr. Canty appeals a counterfeiting conviction because he's innocent of that offense. The government has conceded that the prosecution and the district court erred. That error cost Mr. Canty his constitutional right to stand before the jury and assert his innocence. He was denied this right, and he was wrongly convicted.
Now, Ms. Wolfield, even if, as I think the criminal rules make it pretty clear, the district judge misapprehended the way a defendant is supposed to be treated, I guess he didn't get down to 12.1C. The fact is, this is, like most errors, subject to harmless error review. And it's hard for me to see what aspect of Mr. Canty's defense didn't come in, either through the grand jury testimony or Agent Boydston's testimony. Indeed, it was just really one step removed from his direct testimony. So even though he didn't get a chance to repeat it again, why doesn't the cumulative effect of all this make that error a harmless one?
I think that there is an important distinction that Mr. Canty's testimony would have provided, that being that he did not intend to flash this money to any drug dealer. If you actually look at what Special Agent Boydston testified to, he said, and I quote, he was going to print up $30,000 so he could use a flash roll so they could buy this cocaine. This is not what Mr. Canty would have testified to. In fact, it's directly contradictory to what Mr. Canty would have testified to.
But why is that pertinent under 471, whether he does it or whether he prints it up for somebody else to flash it?
I think it goes to the intent to defraud. And
but so if he were to print up a bunch of money that he wants to give to somebody else to use to purchase drugs, you would agree that satisfies the statute?
I would agree with that because there would be a chain of distribution, and that's what's missing.
But why do you think only spending counterfeit money counts as prohibited use instead of flashing it? I mean, it sounds to me in some ways like your argument is if all you're going to do is flash it, that's not enough of a use. Because he certainly intended for that to happen. He intended to fool the drug dealer be fooled by it.
I think it depends for what purpose you're going to flash the money, and that was not discussed in this case.
Well,
because
are there state cases on this subject or federal cases? State cases are more likely. Forget drugs for a moment. Suppose a potential buyer of real estate wants essentially to keep an option on the property without paying for it now. And in order to prevent the seller from selling it to somebody else, he furnishes a false financial statement showing that he has the assets to buy the property. And so the seller refrains from selling it to somebody else and is going to make it available to him. But this is false. He has no intention of buying the property. He's simply either acting as a front for somebody else or spitefully trying to harm the seller. Would that be viewed as fraud in civil law?
I think that an important distinction in the hypothetical you just gave is that...
I'm not asking for distinctions. I'm asking for how something like that would be viewed in civil law.
The intent to defraud means cheating and deceiving someone to gain money or property. And I think an important distinction is between deceiving and defrauding. And I believe in that situation, a defendant could be guilty of defrauding somebody out of the option to purchase because the defendant himself stood to gain property or money by flashing that money. That's not the case here. Mr. Canty would have gained nothing.
Hypothetical doesn't ask anything about flashing money. Now, maybe you just don't know how state law would treat that. I'm not sure how state law would treat it either. But that seems a close analog to these kinds of circumstances.
I don't know how state law would treat that. I do think that the government has failed to cite any legal authority for the proposition that it is sufficient to satisfy the legal standard of intent just by showing he intended to defraud a drug dealer. The government argues it can establish the intent element by showing Mr. Canty intended to defraud somebody in the chain of distribution, but there was no chain of distribution. Mr. Canty's intent was simply to turn the money over to the government. His intent was to get in good with the cops.
But the government's making a broader argument. The government's saying that 471 doesn't say anything about either who you intend to defraud or what exactly the nature of the fraud is. As long as it's fraud, I mean, Judge Easterbrook's question suggests one would need to be confident that there was something fraudulent happening. It just says whoever with intent to defraud and so on counterfeits the money. So I'm not sure you're responding at least to their point. I mean, you're arguing in a sense that if it's counterfeit money, there has to be a narrower set of circumstances.
I think under
spending, in other words.
Well, I think all of the cases that the government cites where money was given to a third party and the third party's intent was inferred upon the original person, first of all of those cases are discussing counterfeiting under 472, I believe 479. Yeah, none of them discuss it under 471. So there isn't legal authority in this matter. And I think that to infer an intent to defraud on Mr. Canty was improper because his intent was to give the money to the police, period. He never intended.
Well, he intended for the police then to defraud the dealer because they wanted the police to trick him into turning over the cocaine for a cocaine bust, basically.
Well, I don't think that the police showing flash money to a drug dealer would indicate that the police possessed an intent to defraud under the counterfeiting statutes because the police are not trying to deceive the drug dealer so that the police can attain cash or property. All the police want, the cash was never going to get to the drug dealer. The drug dealer indicates a willingness to sell.
No, I accept that.
And agents come in and stop the action. The police were never going to benefit, even if you accept the fact.
Well, it depends, again, what you mean by benefit. There would be a law enforcement benefit because if the dealer turned the cocaine over to them, then they could say, you're arrested, and the cocaine would go into the evidence room, presumably, and they would, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine the police would be sort of subcontracting the counterfeiting of money to do all of this, but we'll put that to one side and,
Well, I think, though, when Congress enacted 471, their intent in writing the language, intent to defraud, was not to hamper law enforcement purposes. And that's where I make the important distinction, I think, between the government benefiting by showing this flash money and securing an arrest versus if Mr. Canty had given it to another drug dealer who was going to get cocaine on the cheap. I think that's an important distinction. I reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Wolfhill. Morrissey.
May it please the Court. My name is Megan Morrissey, and I'm an Assistant United States Attorney here in the Northern District of Illinois. The government asked that this court affirm Anthony Canty's counterfeiting conviction for three reasons. First, that the district court did not err when it limited Anthony Canty's testimony regarding his motivation for manufacturing the counterfeit money.
But the district court did.
It certainly didn't give him ample opportunity to present his defense to the jury. I mean, the fellow got out about three sentences of explanation. Surely the jury would have been more convinced by his story if he'd been able to flesh out some of the concrete details for them. I mean, isn't there a big difference between allowing a defendant to explain his theory in three sentences and allowing him to tell his whole story?
I think there is a difference, Your Honor, but I don't think that a defendant has a constitutional right to present his defense in precisely the exact way he desires.
Well, if we look at arguments are irrelevant. This was such a plain violation of the rule, given Rule 12.3C, that there's just nothing to defend. The district court's action is indefensible. I have no clue why an assistant U.S. attorney talked the district judge into this error. But here we are, right? So we just have to talk about whether it's harmless or not.
Okay.
Are you really defrauding a drug dealer in a legal sense if you are merely flashing the money to show some sort of intent, but you never intend to give them the money? You never intend to have the money placed into circulation. You never intend to take the drugs. Has the drug dealer or the public lost anything of value in that scenario, which I think is the scenario here?
Well, I think your question is one step maybe a little bit too far down the road, because, of course, under the statute, the government is not required to show that anyone actually was defrauded. The drug deal, the proposed
drug...
The argument
is whether it's fraud. I mean, let's suppose that what the police do, or let's suppose that what the defendant did, was prepare a thick wad of, you know, currency-ish substance, but in fact there was no printing on it. He hadn't used his photocopier. It was all blank, cut to the size of the U.S. currency, and there was a real $100 bill on top of it. You roll it all up in a ball and wrap a rubber band around it, and the plan is to pull it out of your pocket to show that I got a big wad of money. Is that fraud?
I think if you're using it to take property from another person, in this case, it would be to take narcotics from a drug dealer, and he is under the impression that he is receiving money in exchange for the drugs he's giving to police, when
so
in fact he was not.
Your view is that if Canty had prepared this wad of blank paper covered by a $100 bill and given it to the police, he could have been prosecuted for criminal fraud?
Well, in that case, I think you'd have the related question as to whether or not this blank, these blank pieces of paper were really counterfeit.
No, not counterfeit,
no,
for
no
fraud.
No claim of counterfeit,
okay.
Just for fraud, right? Criminal fraud.
Maybe state court, don't worry about jurisdiction.
I think in that case, yes. He's wants the drug dealer to think that what he's giving him is a stack of money, which he is not. And the drug dealer is then giving up his...
All the time?
Poor drug dealer.
Of course they do, but they have a public authority defense. They are authorized under the law to engage in those types of transactions, whereas Mr. Canty was not.
So no one can assist the police in doing this. Police have to do it for themselves.
No, certainly not. The police authorize the use of cooperating informants and witnesses all the time, and I think that those people who are properly authorized by law enforcement would have a legitimate public authority defense when they participate
so
in similar transactions.
But I take it then you are conceding that if Mr. Canty merely made the counterfeit money to give the police to use in a drug bust and not for himself to use in a drug bust, that he would have had no intent to defraud.
No, certainly not.
You're not?
Canty, that's exactly what Canty did. He was making counterfeit money, and according to his theory, his intent was to give it to the police for their use in a drug bust.
And how does that, in your view, yet another problem with your case, turn into public authority? Canty repeatedly says, I knew I didn't have authority. It's my bright idea to do this. And I can't see how that turns into an invocation of the public authority defense.
Certainly, we've conceded that point on appeal.
Yeah,
Your Honor.
In your brief, you did. So the district judge was wrong about Rule 12.1A1 and 3. The district judge was wrong about public authority. The district judge may well be wrong about whether there's any actual fraud going on or intent to defraud, as the statute says. So why doesn't this need to be addressed here?
Well, if I could respond to your point, I think that the district judge was not wrong about whether or not there was an intent to defraud here. As the government stated...
Well, it didn't reach this question, did it? Since the district court thought he had made no error.
That's correct. But, however, given the facts of the case, the statute applies broadly. It just says it prohibits manufacturing counterfeit currency with the intent to defraud.
Suppose Mr. Canty had gone to the relevant Chicago police officers and said, I've printed up a bunch of phony money for you to use in your drug bust. He's certainly not defrauding the police officers. He's being absolutely honest about what he's done. There's no fraud at that point, right? And if the police say, what a good idea, we'll use it. Why doesn't it turn into the hypothetical Judge Easterbrook gave you, where it's the genuine $100 bill and just pieces of paper underneath? It's the same situation from the drug dealer's point of view then.
Well, I mean, first of all, a Chicago police officer obviously can't authorize someone to
Realize that's another problem in this case. I think the Secret Service would get very grumpy if the Chicago police started authorizing the manufacture of counterfeit
currency.
It's bad
enough that Kim Jong-il has authorized it without giving this power to the Chicago police as well.
But again, even in that instance, I don't know that the police can sort of retroactively approve somebody's manufacturing of counterfeit money. The money has already been made. The violation of the law has already been established. And
except perhaps for the intent to defraud element.
Yeah. By the way, why was this case prosecuted under 471? There are separate laws making it criminal to make facsimiles of U.S. currency, even if you don't use them to defraud. I assume the penalties are lower, but that's really the crime that everybody seems to agree this defendant has committed. Why not prosecute for that crime?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Your Honor, that information isn't in the record. But again, assuming this court does decide that Mr. Canty's testimony was limited in error.
Change this to that as a lesser included offense?
I'm sorry, Your
Honor? Making facsimile currency without intent to defraud?
I don't believe that's authorized under the statutes, but again, I guess I misunderstand.
Your argument is that only district courts can convict people of lesser included offenses?
No, I don't think this is a lesser included offense. I think this is a separate offense. But again, assuming that you do find that the district court limited his testimony in error, the government submits that error was harmless. First, because Canty's proffered testimony did not negate the intent to defraud, as we've discussed. There is no limitation in the statute. There is no authority saying that the intent to defraud is somehow negated if the money is to be used in an illegal transaction like a drug purchase, for example. Anthony Canty did have an intent to defraud. He intended to defraud a drug dealer. And appellant, you know, has argued that this intent to defraud can't be attributed to Canty because he was just turning the money over to the police and the police were going to be the ones using it in a drug bust. But again, that position ignores the very established line of case law that states that with respect to counterfeiting offenses, intending to defraud someone in your chain of distribution will suffice. And here, Canty intended to defraud a drug dealer in his chain of distribution. And secondly, the error is further harmless because Canty's testimony would have been cumulative. It would have added nothing new or meaningful to the detail that was already before the jury, which was presented both through his grand jury testimony and through the testimony of Special Agent Boydston, who testified as to Canty's post-arrest statements. Finally, the government submits that Canty's conviction should be affirmed because the evidence is sufficient to support the conviction. Viewing the conviction in the light most favorable to the government, as this court is required to do, there's no doubt that a rational jury could have found Canty guilty of the counterfeiting offense. The government alleged at trial that Canty printed counterfeit money in furtherance of his drug trade. The defense put forth a competing argument that Canty was manufacturing counterfeit money to provide to the police. As I've stated, both of those arguments are sufficient to support the element of an intent to defraud, and therefore, this conviction should be upheld on appeal. Unless the panel has any further questions, the government rests on our brief and asks that this court affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morrissey. Anything further, Ms. Wolfhill?
Could you tell me, Ms. Wolfhill, what difference to Mr. Canty's sentence this count makes? Because as I look at the judgment, it looks like count 6, which is the counterfeit count, is just part of a concurrent sentence on counts 1, 2, and 6 of 120 months.
During his sentencing, Mr. Canty, the judge considered Mr. Canty's conviction for this counterfeiting offense. I believe that the sentence would need to be vacated, and it would be up to the district court to resentence Mr. Canty appropriately.
I understand, but it looks to me, in other words, you know, for example, count 5, as it had to be, there's some consecutive sentences. Actually, I'm not even sure he got that right, but it's there's count 5, as it's written, is a consecutive sentence of 180 months, but it's 120 on 1, 2, and 6. So maybe he would see it differently, maybe he wouldn't. I mean, of course, there's a special assessment. I'm not saying this is moot or anything, but I'm just trying to figure out as a practical matter what
the was counterfeiting an extra group when the district court went to do the grouping calculation?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so, Your Honor. At this point, this is a case, the government chose to charge Mr. Canty with a specific intent crime, and then they prohibited him from telling the jury what his intent was. I think the conviction should be reversed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. And Ms. Wolfhill, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment, and you've been of assistance to both your client and the court. Thanks very much.